maybe you participated in a No Kings rally or protest this past weekend. Apparently 8 million Americans did. That's huge. That's a lot of people turning out. There were 3,300 events across the U.S. Wow. Here in Iowa, 50. That's a lot for Iowa. And turnout again, 8 million people. That's up from 7 million people at the No Kings rallies back in October of last year, and up from 5 million people at the initial No Kings actions in June of last year. So there is momentum. And of course, there is pushback. I don't know if Trump actually said anything about it, but one of his spokespeople, Abigail Jackson, we know an Abby Jackson, but I don't think it's the same one. she said, quote, "The only people who care about these Trump derangement therapy sessions are the reporters who are paid to cover them." I mean, that's predictable. So much of political diatribe on both the left and the right is meaningless. And yeah, that's great. Dismissed it as a Trump derangement therapy session. That's cute. And the reporters who are paid to cover them. Some reporters are paid. A lot of reporters don't get paid anymore, you know? And certainly, well, at least you didn't call the protesters themselves paid participants. Because if they had been paid, boy, a lot of money would have been made on Saturday. I'll tell you that. So I was interested in the New York Times take on it. They had five takeaways from the event. And I'm going to share them with you. Then we'll talk about it a bit. One was the war seemed to galvanize younger voters. That may be. Many protesters said the war had brought them out on Saturday, and at least in some places, the conflict appeared to be motivating younger people. That may be. I mean, there were the rally in Des Moines, and again, we had about 5,000 people here, was pretty mixed. I mean, I don't know how to say. I think it was just a pretty broad swath of the population in terms of age and all levels. But that's good to know. It's good to know that young people are upset about what's happening in Iran. The second point that the New York Times makes is Trump's immigration crackdown remains a focus. And that was especially noticeable in Minneapolis, St. Paul. There was a huge, I don't even know how many people, I didn't find that, but there was a huge, absolutely enormous rally and action in Minneapolis, St. Paul over the weekend. The governor spoke, Governor Tim Walz. Yeah, so Bernie Sanders and Bruce Springsteen also there. And, of course, those two are really good at drawing in a big crowd. The third point that the New York Times made was there were also dueling protests at near Mar-a-Lago in Florida, Trump's mansion, Trump's palace. There were thousands of protesters gathered not far from there. And that included Emily Gregory. She's a Democrat and and she's a first-time candidate, and she won that upset victory last week in Florida for a state legislative seat. That is a district that was carried by Trump by 11 points. So that's pretty incredible. And Trump, of course, you probably heard this. Trump voted by mail, and then he declared that voting by mail was cheating. But I guess it's only cheating when someone else does it. So the interesting thing about the No Kings rally in Florida outside of near Mar-a-Lago was there were counter-protesters. I don't remember seeing any counter-protesters in Des Moines. Maybe there were, but I didn't see them. There weren't a very big presence if they were there. But there were counter-protesters at Mar-a-Lago, and they unfurled a huge pro-Trump flag. And the two sides were chanting at each other. Good. That's good First Amendment activity there. Folks, thank you on both sides. So the New York Times' fourth point was that midterm candidates came out in force. So candidates not just for local office, but for the U.S. Senate, U.S. House, are taking these actions very seriously and turning out and showing where they stand. Democrats also, this is the final point from the New York Times story, Democrats found fresh fuel for their No Kings slogan. I'm not quite sure what that means. I think it's always good. 5 points, right? But I think the New York Times missed some of the most important takeaways about this. Again, as I said earlier, there is momentum. One, June of last year, the No Kings rally, 5 million people. October, 7 million. This time, 8 million. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of momentum, and Trump's policies are only making people more and more riled up, more and more inclined to want to exercise their First Amendment right while it still exists to say, no, this is not acceptable. A little more about the rally here in Des Moines. There was a good article in the Iowa Capital Dispatch about it. Dalton Roberts was quoted in the article. He's a veteran, and he said it was his first time coming to one of the demonstrations. He said, quote, I'm being tired sitting around. I've been tired, I guess. Maybe that's a typo. I've been tired sitting around just complaining about it to myself and friends. And he got involved. Good. Another person quoted, also a combat veteran, Jackie Tessen. She said she had learned about the start of military action in Iran, and it scared her because the life of one of her husband's best friends is deployed in Kuwait. And of course, Kuwait is where an Iranian missile struck a facility, killing two Iowa soldiers. So this is starting to hit home. I mean, this is one reason the peace movement took off during the Vietnam War. People started seeing how it was affecting them, their friends, their communities, their families. And I will add to that that there are some people who are also motivated by how it affects people around the world. And speaking of people from around the world, my favorite American, Pope Leo, at I believe it was a mass, but anyway, on Sunday, last Sunday, he said that God ignores the prayers of leaders who wage war and have, quote, hands full of blood. And he said that as thousands of additional U.S. troops were being sent to the Middle East. And also after Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth prayed for violence against enemies who deserve, quote, no mercy. Yeah, this was a Palm Sunday Mass in St. Peter's Square. And the Pope said that the conflict between Iran, Israel, and the U.S. was, quote, atrocious, and that Jesus could not be used to justify war. Quoting the Pope again, this is our God, Jesus, King of Peace, who rejects war, whom no one can use to justify war. He does not listen to the prayers of those who wage war, but rejects them. Now, the Pope did not name Hegseth or anyone else by name. He did call out Iran, Israel, and the U.S. for the war. He said that leaders on all sides of the conflict have used religion to try to justify their actions. That's certainly true of the Iranian, theocratic government. And it's been true of the U.S. in the past. It's certainly true of Israel. What's happening there is crazy. Not just now, but over the past 50 years or more, 70 years. So I think the Pope was probably referring to what Pete Hegseth said last week. And I believe this was said at a church service. Quote, let every round, by round meaning bullet, bomb, weapon, let every round find its mark against the enemies of righteousness and our great nation. Give them wisdom in every decision, endurance for the trial ahead, unbreakable unity, and overwhelming violence of action against those who deserve no mercy. Overwhelming violence of action. This man is sick. This man should not be in charge of the Department of Defense or anything for that matter. Maybe put him in charge of a beer party maybe. But I mean, this man is sick. This man to have this guy in charge is incredible. And more to the point, his religious affiliation is with the Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches, and the founder of that church is a Christian nationalist. So, I mean, I see this kind of talk, this kind of, quote, leadership, this bombastic, militaristic, demeanor clothed in some kind of, quasi-religious robe. I see it as inspiring more and more people to turn out and try to respond to what's going on. So The Guardian had a good story relevant to all this. It asked, why is there no peace movement in the U.S. right now? And there is a peace movement. It's just a heck of a lot smaller than it was back in the 80s, 70s, and 80s, and a heck of a lot smaller than it needs to be. The Guardian points out that the war on Iran is the most unpopular a U.S. war has ever been at its onset. But, pointing out, this dramatic shift in sentiment has not yet translated into organized anti-war opposition. Okay, well, maybe we saw the front end of that this past weekend. Again, a million more people turning out for the No Kings at rallies than were present in October of last year. And I think that's important. How movements form, how they gel, how they come together, how they broaden. It's a challenge. And I think, looking at what happened to the peace movement in the 70s and especially in the 80s is really, really instructive. I mean, it took a lot of grassroots efforts. There was some national involvement. And I can go into detail about that. Some of that was not so good, by the way. It was the really local stuff. And it was, activist groups, for example, at the Nevada test site, people on the ground there organizing local groups from around the country to come and participate in protests that helped lead to a nuclear test ban. It was some activists focusing on installations in their communities, like the Strategic Air Command in Omaha, like Rocky Flats, like the Hanford nuclear site in Washington. Specific locations that drew people from nearby to focus on why that particular facility or installation or activity was contributing to building, escalating militarism, was contributing to the Vietnam War, and then beyond that to the escalation of nuclear weapons. If the peace movement can start figuring out, where are those local points of, those local points are that can, get people to understand that, hey, your community is part of this, without demonizing the people who work there. That's really important. It's really important to make sure that we separate the personnel, the people doing the work, because that's what they have to do to survive, and the policy behind what makes that place important to the continued militarization of our country. So I that's my two cents worth for what it's worth. I also think beyond that, we need, I could say a lot more about this, but I'm going to try to be brief. We'll talk about it more on other occasions we have before. The importance of living counterculturally. The way I see it, yeah, Trump is horrible, but he's a symptom of a bigger problem. And he is a direct result of practices, policies, and lifestyles that have enabled this kind of a person to become so powerful. And again, I can say a lot more about this, but I want to be really clear, really quick here. The five things that I would recommend you do, all of us do, grow some of your own food, as much of it as possible, and then support those farmers who are doing that. I mean, part of this is just trying to say no to a system that allows somebody like Donald Trump to become powerful. And again, part of the system that allows that is this consolidation within our economy, and you see it no more clearly than within the agricultural community. I mean, I almost use the word community in jest there, because in some ways there's very little. I mean, just looking around Iowa, so much of Iowa has been vacated because farms have gotten bigger and bigger. More and more corporations are owning and operating them. There are still family farmers, of course, but they're struggling and it's tough. So yeah, support the local farmers who are growing food. Grow food yourself, one. Two, use cash and barter. Again, the more we allow ourselves to get sucked into the digital economy, the more we allow third-party entities like PayPal, Stripe, Venmo to take a percentage of whatever we want to spend, or if we're receiving donations, what we receive, that empowers these big corporate entities and takes money and resources away from either the local business we're spending money at or the nonprofit that we're trying to support. Tied in with that, shop local. You know, I mean, it's hard. It takes effort, for example, to figure out where you're going to buy razor blades other than Walgreens. And that's why I offer that as an example, because I haven't figured that one out yet. Nearly everything else I do, and Kathy as well, is at a locally owned business. It takes some effort. It's really important. Do that. You know, don't buy from Amazon. Find that local bookstore. Find that local venue that's going to provide that same product, maybe even at a slightly higher price. That's okay. It's okay if you have to pay a little bit more. It's okay to do that because you're making a stronger statement and contributing more to the local economy. Fourth, pollute less. I know it's hard to do. I know it's the big offenders that really are the problem. And that's why we need policies to rein them in. But we all need to do our part. And you feel so much more. I can speak for myself. I feel so much more wholesome if I am, you know, not using plastic if I can avoid it, driving and flying less often. You know, just trying to find ways of not living in a way that contaminates our world and that negatively impacts people, not just in our community, but around the world. And five, and perhaps most importantly, be a part of the bigger political solution. Yeah, the 2026 election's really, really important. I can't say enough about how important it is that people mobilize to support candidates that they believe in, that they believe are going to restore some of the rights that we've seen lost. But do more than that. Again, yeah, being part of the bigger solution means going to No Kings rallies, but that's entry-level stuff. Go, you know, spend 2 hours getting pumped up, letting the world know that we're not going quietly into this slide into authoritarianism. But then take it to the next step. You got to do more than that.